Where Murder Meets Mystery contains graphic and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, cool friends. Let's take a walk down the street where murder meets mystery, a podcast exploring the murderous, the mysterious, and everything that lies beyond the beyond. I'm Marissa.
And I'm Grace.
And welcome to episode 18.
Hey.
We are legal age. We can buy lottery tickets, cigarettes, but not alcohol. Not yet.
Nope. Not in this country. I wonder if it was 18. Isn't that weird?
Yes, like when our parents were kids. Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Where my parents went to school was technically considered a wet campus. They could have like kegs everywhere and beer and this and that and fun. Every like campus event had beer with it, which would be awesome. But it's not a thing today's day and age. I can't speak.
So okay. I'm coming off a
wedding weekend. My boyfriend's friend was getting married, so I am tired. So there might be some mistakes in this episode, and just bear with us, you know?
Oh my God. I'm not even going to say might. I guarantee you I will make mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm very out of it today and just tired and – you know, cool friends, why would we even try to front with you? It's going to be a rough one because we're both out of it today. And it's just, God, it's been one of those weekends, you know?
Yes, I completely understand. And my mystery is super, super interesting this week. And I'm very excited to hear Grace's case this week. So Grace, do you just want to get into it?
Yeah, I mean, not really. I'm going to do it anyway.
We've got to do it for the cool friends.
It's a sad one this week, guys. It really is. And unfortunately, just there's topics of racial injustice this week.
Oh, no.
And while that is relevant in everything that we do in our lives, I think that this particular case, it really highlights the discrimination, the hatred, the racism, that kind of thing, particularly in this region that we're going to be talking about. And it's heavy, but yeah. I felt like it needed to be talked about. And so I'm diving in.
Okay.
So today I'm going to be talking about the case of Tamla Horsford.
Okay.
And this case went viral online, particularly at the beginning of 2020. It happened back in 2018, but it wasn't getting a ton of attention. And I think that had a racial factor because the victim, Tamla Horsford, was a Black woman.
Okay.
And as we know, those cases are stereotypically undercovered. And unfortunately, that happens very often.
Yeah.
But what happened in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd was the Black Lives Matter movement and that whole resurgence in cries for justice and equality, particularly amongst the Black community. And this case was one of those that was brought to the forefront after that movement kind of, it brought a lot of similar cases to light, you know?
Okay, amazing.
So Tamla Ayana Horsford was born in 1978 in the Caribbean. Her family moved to the Bronx, and then Tamla later moved to Florida, where she met her husband, Leander, nicknamed Lee. And that's how I'll refer to him in the story. But as I mentioned, this case was viral on social media last year and the year before. So it may sound familiar because I think we've talked about this, Marissa, even if it was just like, hey, look at this shit, you know, like that kind of thing.
Totally.
So it may sound familiar, but Lee had a daughter previously, and Tamla immediately welcomed his daughter into her arms, raised her as her own from the time the girl was very little. Lee and Tamla eventually moved with Lee's daughter to Georgia, specifically in Forsyth County, which Forsyth County has a history of being racist as fuck. So in 1912, a Black man named Rob Edwards was lynched for allegedly raping a white woman. Convicted on zero evidence. And after this, hundreds of people of color were run out of Forsyth, more precisely around 1,000 populated the county in 1912, and then nearly every single Black resident was driven out, leaving Forsyth County predominantly white to this day.
Wow.
And as of 2020, only 4% of the population is people of color.
Wow.
This information is extremely important in general, but also relevant to this case. So that brings me now to November of 2018. Tamla is invited to a woman named Jean. It's spelled like Jean, J-E-A-N-N-E,
okay.
Jean Meyer's house for a slumber party. And it's kind of a girls' night kind of birthday party thing. Their sons all played on the same football team, and they had only met a few months prior in August of 2017.
Okay.
So on Saturday – or no, I'm sorry, August of 2018. On Saturday, November 3rd, 2018, it's the day of the party. Jean had invited 8 women. So there were 10, I think, total in attendance. So it was Jean, Stacy, Madeline, who was Jean's aunt, Nicole, Marcy, Bridget, Jennifer, Sarah, Paula, and then, of course, Tamla.
Okay.
Some of these women were meeting for the first time. Jose Barrera, who was Jean's boyfriend, and Tom Smith, who was Stacy's husband, were also there that night, but planned on spending the evening in the basement watching the game.
Sure.
So pretty much everyone was there by 7:30. Tamla arrives a little later in a great mood. She changed in her pajamas as soon as she got there. She was wearing a white onesie with gray paw prints, wearing black and red socks with rainbow stars. She brought a really nice bottle of tequila. She was a big fan of tequila. And so she brought a really nice bottle of Mexican tequila for Jean.
Amazing.
Except that Jean made it very clear, like, ugh, she was not going to drink tequila, and tequila was not for her. And everyone was like, oh yeah, no, I'm not touching that. Like, they were just,
oh my
honestly,
gosh.
I don't know what the fucking big deal was about the tequila. Cause I know a lot of us, including myself, have had a negative reaction to tequila at one point. But that's like, you move
just,
on.
Or you just, you know, say, thank you so much for this sweet gift.
Right.
Can't wait to enjoy it later. And just, you know, you don't have to enjoy it that night.
There's like 5 minutes of Kendall's video that we're on a first name basis. There are like, there's like 5 minutes of the video where they're taught, she's playing this footage from some news network, and all the women are talking about how they, like, Tamla went outside to smoke a cigarette, and they all like passed the bottle around and we're like smelling it and saying like, oh yeah, no one's going to drink it. Like, it's such a bitchy, you know. Oh,
and how old are they? Sorry.
They're all in their 40s.
Okay, great. So I cannot wait for that shit to still be going on when I turn 40.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I do want to note that it may have been apparent to everybody, but I did not state it, that all of the women were white. Tamla was the only person of color at the party.
Okay. I assumed.
I do have to say that. Yeah. So Tamla goes out to smoke a cigarette. All the women are talking shit about the tequila. But everyone is drinking, just not the tequila. The only two women who did not drink were Sarah and Nicole, because they were planning on driving home that night.
Okay.
Tamla went out several times that night to smoke a cigarette. And then even joined Madeline, who, remember, is John's aunt. And, Stacy on the porch to smoke some weed.
Okay.
Stacy said she just had one puff.
Sure.
So they had to stop because Jean came out, and she was pissed because her boyfriend, Jose, is a pretrial probation officer for the Forsyth County court system.
Okay.
And she said, if he finds you guys smoking pot out here, he's going to be pissed.
Sure.
Pot? Who am I? My mom? Okay. So the night continues with everyone on the main floor. So I fucked up and forgot to put a picture on the drive, but I'm going to try and explain this.
Okay.
The house is 3 stories. There's the ground level where pretty much the whole party was going on. The top floor, which as far as I can tell, only has the kitchen and like maybe the living room. And I think that's where the door that goes onto the street is. At like the front porch.
Oh, okay.
And then the main floor was where they all were. This was like the lower level. And then they have the basement where the guys were for most of the night.
Okay.
So the door they were going in and out of all night was the door for the lower level back door, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yep. Out into the backyard.
Yeah. Okay. Out into the backyard. So that's where they were going in and out of all night to smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
And that'll be more relevant later. So the night continues. Everyone's on the main floor. Tamla FaceTimes Lee and says goodnight, along with saying goodnight to all of her kids. And then Sweet. She calls her daughter on a separate call. Oh. Everyone says that Tamla was in good spirits. The last person to arrive is Paula, who, classic Paula, gets to the party late, around 10.
Okay.
Sarah and Nicole start to leave around that time. It's estimated that they left around 10:30.
Okay.
Marcy takes Jennifer to bed because she was the drunkest. Absolutely. Jen.
Silly girls.
Everyone starts winding down and going to bed around 1:15. Around this time, Tamla expresses interest in going home, but Stacy, Tom, and Jean are all saying, no, you've been drinking, like you shouldn't get behind the wheel.
Right.
So Lee finds this out later during the investigation, and he is super pissed because he's like, she would have been absolutely fine. One thing he knew for sure about his wife is that she could hold her liquor, and he knows for sure she would have been fine. He says they're both from the islands and grew up drinking, and she could handle her liquor.
I get it, sure, but also, like, never, ever a good idea to drive.
Well, it would have been a better idea than staying.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
but
no.
You're right. You're right. For the record, girlfriends, we do not condone drinking and driving.
Right, right, yeah.
Right. But I get what you're saying. Later, Tamla's sister, Summer, also told NBC News that, quote, never, ever, ever have I seen my sister sloppy drunk and incoherent, so I doubt that she would pick a sleepover with people she was just getting to know to start behaving that way.
Right.
End quote.
Right?
Yeah. And let alone a party with a bunch of white women. You know, right? Tamla was very accepting and inclusive, but, like, I think she was wary of going, and she even tells and Lee even tells investigators this, that she was, like, a little hesitant to go. She wasn't super comfortable leaving, and even if she wasn't stating that was why, right, she wasn't sure about
going. And just, like, you know, people you haven't met before, why would you get, for the first time of all times, blackout drunk, right, in front of them, you know?
Right, exactly, exactly. So regardless, Tamla agrees to stay. Jose and Jean go to bed. It seemed like Tamla wanted to stay up and, like, hang out with people, but everyone was pretty much going to bed. At this point, Stacy goes to bed, and Tamla and Bridget are the only two left awake. Mm-hmm. Bridget decides at the last minute that she's going to leave. So she calls her husband to come pick her up. And while she's waiting for her ride, she and Tamla sit in the kitchen and they eat some gumbo. Stacy made gumbo.
Yeah.
And Tamla was like, I'm going to go out and smoke a cigarette, and then I'm going to go to bed after you leave. When Bridget's husband gets there, Tamla walks Bridget to the door and they say goodnight. Now, Jean's horse. Horse. I forgot. Okay.
I almost went hee-haw, and then I realized that's not a horse. That's a donkey. So glad I stopped myself. A little regretful that I mentioned that.
It's fine. Okay. Jean's house has a security system, so we have a log of every single time the door opened and shut that night.
Okay,
so 1:47. Yeah, but we don't know who's going.
Right, we just know the timestamps.
Yeah, so 1:47 a.m. the front door opens as Bridget leaves. 1:49 a.m. ground level back door opens. Tamla, we think, is leaving to smoke. We think
makes sense. Yeah.
1:50, so immediately after, Tamla shuts the door, we think, behind her, like she's still outside. 1:57, the door opens again, but is never closed after that.
Oh, okay.
So as far as we know, the back door remains open the rest of the night.
Right. And maybe she came back inside, forgot to shut it, or didn't shut it all the way, or somebody else went outside.
Yeah, it's possible that someone, like, followed her outside. We don't really know.
Yeah.
4:10 a.m., the front door opens. We find out later this is Marcy leaving for work. Whatever.
I'm sorry,
She's leaving for work. By the way, she works at Coach. She works at a Coach outlet.
Okay.
And her shift didn't start till 10:30, so.
Right, so what time was that? Say it again.
4:10 a.m.
Okay. Yes. Something ain't adding up.
Yeah, come on, Marcy. Spill the beans. 7:30 a.m., front door opens. This is Paula leaving. Between 8 and 8:30, Stacy and Tom come downstairs and are getting ready to leave. Madeline, Jean's aunt, so she's the oldest of all the ladies.
Right.
Okay. Madeline wakes up between 8 and 8:30 and walks by the kitchen window on her way to make coffee.
Okay.
And sees that 40-year-old Tamla Horsford is outside in the backyard, lying down and motionless in the grass.
Oh, no.
Madeline gets down on her knees and starts praying.
Okay.
I want to talk about this for a second because what the fuck? Okay. I'm not a religious person. I've made that clear.
Right.
But I hold no disdain for the religious as long as they do not
right
judge me. I will not judge them.
I just that think maybe said, the
I
first...
have a judgment. It's yes. a little bizarre.
Maybe first call 911.
Right.
Then drop or to your like, knees. Drop to your knees as like, you're calling 911.
Go check on her or like go out on the deck yeah. and say, Tamla, you know, like hello.
Yeah,
like,
that
you know?
Is true. It's like how did she know right then and there that something was – I mean, granted, something is wrong. She is face down. But yeah, right. the whole not going outside and so yelling her name or calling 911. Yeah. I don't know. It's a little sus. A little sus.
So Madeline is super weird.
Okay.
And Madeline, Jean, and Stacy, so the three women that like knew each other the best out of right. the whole group, are very odd. And same with Jose. I something had to have happened. And okay. I'm not going to speculate until the end when I've sure. presented all the evidence. But
okay, love.
It's super sketchy. Okay. So Madeline gets down on her knees, prays, gets up, goes and tells Jose what she saw. So she like knocks on Jose and Jean's door mm-hmm. and she claims that she heard water running, like maybe they were in the shower and she didn't want to interrupt them.
Okay.
So
sure.
she goes back downstairs to get another look at Tamla, according to her statement.
Mm-hmm.
Then she goes immediately back up the stairs, knocks louder, and they say she can come in. And she says, I want to talk to Jose alone. And Jean was like, what's wrong? Right?
Yeah, what? Ew, weird.
And yeah. And she's like, oh, your friend from the islands is in the backyard, not moving.
Okay, one, she has a name. Two, yeah. what the fuck?
So Madeline claims that she didn't remember Tamla's name at that point.
Okay.
She's like, I just met her the night before. I'm like, yeah, but that's – wouldn't seeing her unconscious in the backyard like trigger something in your mind?
Right,
like,
you,
I know
you don't
who
have
that
to
is.
Address her as your friend from the islands. Like, just right. say, hey, come downstairs to... right now. Your friend's in the backyard.
Yeah, yeah. So, oh, either way, by the way, it later comes out that Jean and Jose claim they were actually sleeping when Madeline knocked the first time, not showering. So, we're not really sure what
water
Madeline
came
was
from?
Yeah, hearing. Yeah, exactly. So Jose comes running, same with Jean. They end up going outside and they call 911 at 8:59 a.m.
Okay.
Tamla was lying under the deck, okay? Not like completely under the deck, but like right below the deck on the grass.
Right.
Jose apparently never performed CPR or any other life-saving maneuver. And remember, he's a probation officer, so he should
know.
A professional. Yeah. And also when you call 911, even if you don't know CPR, the dispatcher will talk you through it.
Right. Okay.
And they ask him on the call, they're like, is she breathing? And he's like, I have absolutely no idea. I'm like, what?
No. Oh no.
It just seems crazy. Like it doesn't even sound like he's near her. And like, it's just weird. So police are dispatched at 9 a.m. and they arrive at 9:07. Because Jose and Jean say that Tamla fell off the deck. That's what they say when they call.
Okay.
They say they think she fell off the deck. The police treat the scene assuming it was an accident. So the scene is, get this, not preserved, and the witnesses are not immediately interviewed.
Oh, classic. In
fact, they're not interviewed until – interviewed. They're not interviewed until several days later.
Oh, great. Great. That's good. So they can all convene and make up a story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and get this. While they were waiting to be interviewed, they put them all in a room together with no supervision. So
what do you think
is happening in there?
Right.
Right.
Talk through our stories, people.
Right. So there are conflicting reports about how Tamla was found. So Jose and Jean and everyone else who was there, so Madeline and Stacy, say that Tamla was lying face down and her arms were like tight at her side and she was completely face down, like no part of her face was showing and her legs were straight. So like,
okay, like planking,
like,
almost.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say that. Yeah. Like that position, which is just so eerie.
Yeah. Don't like that.
I mean, oh my God. It's just like, it gives me chills, but that's what they say.
Okay.
Now the police say, and according to the report, police say she was face down, but had one arm bent and the other out to her side, more consistent with a fall, because yeah. no one's going to fall in like straight. A plank position.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Great.
So regardless of who it was, it's likely that Tamla's body was moved or tampered with in some way.
Right, right.
When they get to the scene, the height of the balcony is clocked at a little under 15 feet. So okay. obviously far enough to kill somebody if you fell in the right way. And especially if you were drunk. Yeah.
Scary.
So everyone who was there says the image of her lying down in that weird position with her arms to her side is like burned in their mind. So they seem Oof. Really, really adamant that that was the position of her body.
Don't love that.
A lot of the public is speculating that Jose might have moved her, considering he was the professional who, like, he was technically the first responder. Okay. In a secondary investigation conducted by the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the following information is found and later obtained by Rolling Stone. Keep in mind that we don't know that the police record is correct either. So we really don't know what the fuck happened.
Right, yeah.
Authorities had already disclosed that Barrera had been let go for searches related to Horsford's case. But Barrera, by the way, that's Jose. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Barrera is Jose. But Barrera was also the center of another important debate, whether or not Horsford's left arm had been moved. When found and photographed, Horsford's right arm was next to her body, while her left arm was extended and bent at the elbow. However, statements from Barrera and the homeowner, Jean Myers, recall Horsford being found with both arms at her side. Did someone move her left arm, perhaps to check for vitals, et cetera, et cetera. Okay.
I mean, I feel like he would have said that, right?
And then there was like some...
I feel like he would have said that.
Yeah, there was some allegation that he had called Lieutenant Andy Collin, who was on the case, K-A-L-I-N, he had called, and that was like the first call he had made, was not to 911, but to this guy who he had a previous relationship with.
Interesting. Okay.
And that... Lieutenant Collin had told him to check for a pulse, and that's why the arm was moved. But this was never confirmed for sure. This is just what GBI says in their report.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
So I would not be surprised if the police meddled some way in this investigation. I mean, this is the only black woman at a house in a white person's house, and she's in a racist county right. with racist history.
They also just didn't preserve the scene at all.
Right.
In any way to potentially have accurate evidence for something of homicide.
Right. Right. Everyone's brought inside for questioning. Jean is instructed to call everyone back. And in the meantime, like I said, everyone is left in a room together unsupervised. Never a good idea.
Yep.
So the police go over to Lee's house, and this is really fucked up. So his sons answer the door. Lee comes, they're like, dad, the police are at the door. Lee comes to the door. The police ask him three times if his name is Lee, and they're getting more and more disrespectful with each question. They're saying like, oh, is God. Your name Lee? And he's saying, what does this pertain to? And they keep repeating it.
Oh no.
And finally the guy just says, the officer says, it's about your wife. She's deceased. And Lee says, he said it with no remorse, like just like flat out, just like said it.
Ugh. That breaks my heart.
Obviously, he's Lee. You're at his fucking house. It's just it's so infuriating to me. At first, Lee is thinking it's a car accident, and he's like starts to like grab his stuff to leave, and they say they don't even allow him near the house. Again, not a crime scene, so there's no reason why he can't go over there.
Everyone else could be around her body, but her own family can't.
And so the police, this is like, as far as I know, several hours after Tamla's body's found. Mm-hmm. And they say, there's been an accident. Your wife tripped and fell to her death. And police wouldn't let him go to the house to like talk to anybody. They wouldn't let him, whatever. And I'm like, they haven't closed the case. So they're not allowed to discuss the details of any of that with him, even though he's the spouse.
Yeah.
So like the fact that they've confirmed this is an accident and nothing, there's not even an autopsy that's been done at this point. Ugh, this is literally hours, like the same day.
Yeah.
Autopsy is eventually performed. There are cuts and abrasions to her face, forearm, tips of her fingers, and her lower legs. All of the cuts are smaller than half an inch.
Okay, interesting.
They find a 3/4 inch laceration to the left ventricle of her heart.
What the
hell? There's no
like
external trauma, so it's really bizarre.
So, I mean, I feel like those injuries would coincide with a fall. but maybe a push.
But not from 15 feet.
You don't think so?
Like falling maybe in a bush.
Right.
But falling from 15 feet, these are smaller than half inch. Like this is like a like paper cut.
Oh.
Like that size.
Yeah. So maybe you know, they're just really finding things like from previous injuries?
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing they're post-mortem and that's why – or perimortem and that's why they're mentioning that.
Yeah.
But I – it like that's why it's included in the report. And then like the cut to her heart, like how does that happen? And
that is weird.
She has some severe injuries to the her neck and her temple on her head. But they're, again, not consistent with a fall from that height.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. She would have broken something, right?
Yeah. And this is my ruling. And I'm not an expert, but I'm like, if she were to fall face down from 15 feet, right?
Right.
And as far as we know, made no attempt to stop her fall or brace her, like, and even if she had, assuming she was conscious when she fell and assuming she did fall, right, she would have reached out her arms to stop her, but she didn't have any fractures to her arms. And she's that falling from so, 15 feet.
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't make sense. It's not consistent.
Yeah. And even if she hadn't, even if she wasn't conscious, maybe she passed out and fell
right,
off the deck.
Right.
It's like, she would have fractured her face.
That
like
that would have been more injury because you couldn't stop yourself or brace your fall.
Yeah. So it's just sketchy. It's all so sketchy. So her blood alcohol content is 0.238, which is 3 times the legal limit. And I double checked that, triple checked it.
Okay.
No, yeah. So she was drunk, but we knew that.
Right.
THC and Xanax were found in her system. Now,
oh boy.
The reason the Xanax is weird is Xanax was – the amount was less than the smallest dose available on the market.
Huh.
And it had not yet been metabolized by her liver, meaning she had just taken it. Like,
interesting.
She also wasn't prescribed Xanax.
So maybe to help her fall asleep? I don't know.
Yeah, no. She's – I mean, I feel like the 0.238 would do a good job of that, you know.
Right. And the weed.
Yeah. So it's worth saying here that Bridget, who was the last person with her, as far as we know, it's worth saying here that Bridget had been prescribed Xanax and that although Bridget had the medication with her, nobody recalls Bridget giving any to Tamla, including Bridget. Does not remember that.
And she was the one that left at what? Right before 150?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So many women at the party had gotten pills from Bridget in the past, and Stacy is actually caught in a lie when she tells the officers that Bridget hadn't given her anything that morning. She says no, and the officer said, so you'd be surprised to know that there's a text on your phone asking for more medicine. And she said, okay, well, I mean, I'm not going to say I didn't.
Oh,
like she was, just did.
She said innocent until proven guilty, and she was proven guilty real quick. That is hilarious.
She goes, oh, well.
She's like, well, you caught me there.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Yeah. So Tamla's cause of death is ultimately ruled as blunt force trauma consistent with a fall and is ruled an accident. On February 6, 2019, the ME releases their final report and they say that no injuries indicate foul play.
Okay.
Some reports say only a handful of photos were taken at the autopsy, and some say that no photos were taken during the autopsy. Neither of which is acceptable because during an autopsy, you need to heavily document the procedure, and that's standard procedure.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so they're saying like, well, that way they know that no one's like tampering with the organs.
Yeah,
or whatever.
I guess
like,
that
they
makes
don't
sense.
Know.
Yeah.
So there, yeah, like I said, Kendall Ray's video says no photos were taken during the autopsy, but the Rolling Stone article I found said only a handful of photos were. So
either way, not enough.
Either way, not enough. Yeah. Now, police's first theory was that she tripped and fell on the ground level, which would make her injuries make a little more sense because they're so minor. You would think her injuries would be more severe had she fallen from that high up. And her teeth were undamaged.
Oh,
again,
come
you're
on.
Falling face down from 15 feet.
That
and
does
your
not
teeth
make sense.
Are intact. Yeah. So police officially closed the case on February 20th. This is even more fucked up. It just makes me want to scream. Lee goes to the funeral home to view Tamla because they're prepping her for just the viewing.
Yeah.
She had been painted in blackface.
Now, sorry, what?
Tamla was a black woman. Mm-hmm. But Lee says that what it looks like was that they had put black shoe polish on her face.
Shut up.
I'm not kidding.
Oh, that's so bad.
Sickening.
Yeah.
So he basically says, I walked in the middle of this like funeral home and I said out loud, what the fuck? Take that off my wife. No. That is not my wife. Right. And they said, sir, you don't understand. Like, we had to cover the bruising. And he's like, you didn't have like makeup or anything to match her. Like, that just tells you what county we're in.
Right.
You know, like, it's so disgusting. Go to the fucking
Dollar General. Get something. God.
I'm just like, holy shit. It's so unacceptable. And it's just like how that ever flew is just, oh my God. So he walks out and his sons can see that he's mad. And they say, what's wrong, Dad? And he's like, you can't go in there. You can't see that. That's not your mom. And they eventually talk him into like taking them in there because they're like, Dad, I want to see her.
Yeah.
And Lee says they all stood over their mom and just didn't even cry because it looked nothing like her.
Wow.
So ultimately he decided to make it a closed casket.
Ugh, that sucks. But it's just heartbreaking. So sad. That is so sad. It's heartbreaking.
So that was probably one of the more heartbreaking aspects of the case. I want to go back to it for a second to the security system.
Okay.
So I mentioned that Jean's phone notifies her whenever the door opened. And I mentioned that the doors open at 1:49, 1:50 when Bridget is leaving, and the back door opens again at 1:57, which would be consistent with Tamla coming back inside, but the door never closes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's uncovered during the investigation that there are security cameras around the entire backyard.
Okay, I was going to ask, if they have a sensor on their door, they more than likely should have a security camera. Usually a security camera comes first and then the sensors come later. So I'm like, huh.
Mm-hmm. Except they were all dead.
Sure.
Apparently, Jean had them installed when she and her ex-husband were going through their divorce. Okay. But things began to get better, according to her. So the cameras died and she didn't recharge them. So it's just so weird.
Yeah. I mean, granted, ours has died outside, yes. But the day it dies, I go out there and pull it out to charge it again. Because it's like, that's what you do. That is just so weird.
Jose and Jean are just, God, they're just fucking so dirty. Sus. I know they're hiding something.
Yes, something's not right.
I know they're hiding something. Yeah. And so Jose's story is super weird. So remember how Madeline goes upstairs to get him and he follows her outside.
Right.
Well, he knows at this point that Tamla is unconscious in the backyard. But when he goes out on the balcony rather than the lower level, even though he knows she's on the ground level.
Right.
He goes out the balcony door to look off the deck. And before he looks at her, he notices a cigarette and a lighter on the floor of the deck. And he stops to pick them up and put them on the edge of the fireplace.
No, we don't have time for that, sir.
Because he says he has OCD and cleans obsessively and that, like, he wouldn't have moved anything had he known what he was about to walk up on. He did know.
He saw her. Yeah.
And Madeline had just told him, your friend from the islands is lying on the – like
– What the fuck? What? No, see, and you don't need to be doing that much explaining either. Oh, well, I moved it because I have OCD and I obsessively clean things. And No. And when you start talking like that and you make excuses for things, that is guilt. Yeah.
Why? First of all, why was the cigarette and lighter on the deck? Because remember, the ground floor back door was the one that was opened at 1:50.
That doesn't make sense.
A.M. when Tamla went out to smoke. And so the injuries the be up there?
Are more likely to coincide with that of a smaller fall versus the one on a larger deck. Yeah.
Right. Also, while investigators Tyler Sexton and Mike Sexton.
I knew you were going to laugh at that.
Just said it out loud. I've been writing it all day and I just read it out loud and it just made me laugh. Okay. Investigators Tyler Sexton and Mike Christian are at the house. Jean, get this. Oh my God. I cannot even believe this. Jean leaves and gets them Dunkin' Donuts gift cards. I wish this was a joke, Marissa.
What the fuck?
They let this bitch leave, first of all. Second of all, she got them gift cards. These are officers who are investigating a murder or a death at her house.
For coffee and donuts.
Yes.
And if that ain't a bribe, I don't know what is.
I literally. And you hear her on the footage, like on the body cam recording. It's not that we don't have like the video footage, but the audio.
Okay.
And you hear her on the footage saying, yeah, and I was told it wouldn't look good if I got y'all something before the case was closed, but I know it's, and I know it's stereotypical, but all cops love Dunkin' Donuts, right?
Oh, my
and the cop is like chuckling.
Oh,
and then
no.
You hear Madeline, her aunt, say she baked them cookies. It's nauseating.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. And then we hear Jean in the same breath say to the officers, do y'all need me or can I go upstairs and start getting ready for this funeral?
What?
Literally.
What? But the funeral wouldn't be the same day. That's what? I don't get it.
Yeah, and she says, this funeral, this is your friend who died in your backyard.
That's weird.
And she's like laughing. She's like, can I get ready? And the cop says, oh no, go do your thing.
Oh, great. Great.
God, it's just so infuriating. So Bridget is later interviewed. Again, remember, she's the, as far as we know, the last person to see Tamla alive. And she's really like off topic in the interview. And she's like talking about children and how she's like a mother hen and how other people's children trust her. But there were no kids there that night. So I don't really know what
that meant.
She seems honestly like she's on drugs. That's kind of how I would describe the behavior. It's very strange.
Okay.
So now we move into like all the systemic shit that's happening here because Jose Barrera is caught later looking into some confidential information about the case.
What?
Jose is actually fired, but no legal action is ever taken against him. So he loses his job only, I think this is a year, maybe a few months after the case is closed.
Wow.
In October of 2020, following an internal affairs investigation, investigator Mike Christian resigned from the Forsyth County Sheriff's Office amid allegations that he had sent multiple women he was having affairs with confidential information and even photos from the Tamla Horsford case.
The fuck?
According to two women who came forward, Mike refers to Tamla as, quote, porch lady. So he's a piece of shit.
No.
Literally. These are women he's sleeping with is sending them like crime
affair,
scene photos.
Having an affair with, you said, right? Wow. Yes. Wow. And he held some sort of power at one point. That is insane. Yeah.
He was like one of the lead investigators.
Right. That's terrifying. And you know that that's probably not uncommon, unfortunately, in terms of like mishandling of information
100%.
And spreading confidential information.
It made me wonder how many times like – if you're ever dating a cop, do they like, they're like, hold on, I got to close this case real fast. Like, just text you about it? Like,
I mean, I'd be curious, but probably, I can't imagine.
Of course. But they're probably not supposed to share anything, you know?
No, not at all.
Not probably. They're definitely not supposed to share anything.
Right.
So there's another woman, a separate woman, that claims that he shared the details of the toxicology report and even that he suspected that Tamla's body had been moved and shared that fact with this woman.
Okay.
He told one girlfriend that he did think Tamla's death was an accident, but was not consistent with a balcony fall, which checks out with what the police said earlier.
Okay, yeah,
where it's
sure.
Not, it doesn't align with a balcony fall. Again, it's worth saying that we can't believe a fucking word coming out of this asshole's mouth.
Right,
and it's
right.
Apparent that he didn't act on any of his so-called suspicions, so he still sucks. Mike claims that the woman who reported him was acting because he had chosen to end their extramarital relationship abruptly and had hurt her, and so she was acting out of spite.
Mm-hmm.
Mike admits to sending the messages but says he was being sarcastic and just making inappropriate statements regarding the case. He ultimately resigns rather than lose his job. It's also rumored and pretty much confirmed that Mike Christian and Tyler Sexton are racist and had several instances involving mistreatment of people of color. It says rumored in the article I read, but I do want to clarify, like I saw this picture where they had some racial dolls. They were like racially insensitive and offensive dolls, portraying people of color.
Okay.
And they were like posing next to the dolls and like smiling. So I feel like that's problematic.
Right.
And then I imagine that's just, if they're posting that online, I imagine mm-hmm. that's just the surface.
Right. You know?
So the sheriff at the time, a man named Ron Freeman, has faced allegations of his own, citing racism and nepotism.
Great, great.
During the Black Lives Matter movement that brought so many cases like Tamla's to be reconsidered, there was a Change.com petition calling for Tamla's case to be reopened, It received more than 600,000 signatures.
Oh, that's amazing.
The Georgia Bureau of Investigation announced they were reopening the case in July of 2020, with Forsyth County Sheriff's Office stating their willingness to assist in any way. In May of 2021, Forsyth County District Attorney Penny Penn.
I love it.
Sounds like a fake journalist. Like it sounds like, I'm Penny Penn on the scene. Like it just sounds so,
yeah.
I don't know. Penny Penn announced that the announced that the GBI had concluded their inquiry and there would be no charges filed in Horsford's death. They didn't see any indication of foul play.
Wow.
The Horsford's family attorney, Ralph Fernandez, reviewed the case, decided it was a strong possibility that this case was a homicide, and says that there were conflicting witness statements, contamination of a crime scene, and the obvious lack of the autopsy photos. He told Rolling Stone, "This is an ever-expanding event. I am dealing with a really unusual situation that has been complicated further by official intermeddling, by an absence of cooperation from law enforcement, and by distraction within that I consider to be the primary investigation." Fernandez is currently working on a comprehensive in-depth report, his own Warren Commission. Quote, "I don't think it's only fair to the project or to Tamla just to say, here's what law enforcement should have done." Fernandez explained, quote, "I think what we need to do is also investigate from our perspective how and why this was so difficult and so challenging and so adversary," end quote.
Right.
To this day, Tamla Horsford's death is still deemed an accident, and her tragic story, as well as the tragedy that befell the Horsford family and friends, is such a heartbreaking example of racial injustice and a reminder that the fight is far from over. Tamla's sister Summer later told NBC News that Tamla was, quote, Supermom. She made sure she could provide for them. She was always the type of person who would stand up for the little guy. It's unfortunate that it has to take other people's heartbreak and other people's loss for the proper attention to be given this case involving my sister.
Yeah.
I wanted to end with something, you know, that with that positive statement from her sister, because that's how I'm, you know, based on the interviews I've seen with Tamla's family, that I would, you know, it sounds like they want her to be remembered as the amazing mom she was. She loved being a mom. She was a mother to six children, really involved in their lives. And Lee even tells a story about like how she would go to every single one of her son's football games. And if the ref made, she would like stand on the sidelines with a bullhorn, which Marissa, and every time the ref made a bad call, she would shout, "Can't stop greatness," bullhorn. And I'm like, that's going to be my new motto.
Oh, honest to God. Very sweet. That was very sweet.
It really is. So she was a wonderful mother, a wonderful woman, a wonderful wife to Lee and sister to Summer and a friend. And I think it's just her story is so important to highlight and share and spread. And I encourage you to share cases like these, particularly where the victims are people of color, because they don't get enough attention. They really don't.
Oh, Grace, thank you for
that.
That was really deep, really heavy.
It didn't help my mood today. I was I was feeling depressed already.
But it's so important to talk about. And I'm so glad
we
do get to talk about cases like that. Something is fishy. So
I'm
hopeful that something will come out sooner than later. Someone knows something, right? Something has to come out. I mean, that just sounds a little sketch to me.
Yeah. I'm just hoping that someone, like the right person, asks the right question and like because right now I feel like everyone's just kind of sworn to secrecy, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
And everyone's in cahoots.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, please tell me about your mystery so we can...
Okay, today's mystery for you ghoul friends is going to be a cult, and it's one that's still active, very much in the public eye, and definitely not one to make light of. So I think in one of our descriptions we have that we're, quote, comedy podcast, you know, true crime paranormal comedy podcast. But – and, you know, sometimes you make some good jokes, some good giggles about funny names or whatever else, you know. But this one is – it's – the outside of it is kind of like you're like, wait, what? But I'm going to try not to crack any jokes today because it is serious. Any cult is serious, you know. So I empathize with cult members I've mentioned on here. I think they're victims, and I don't agree with most anything a cult does, but I understand why people fall into them. The cult I'll be speaking on today hasn't broken any news outlets or media yet. So right now it's solely being covered on Instagram by Katie Joy from the account Without a Crystal Ball. And I believe it also blew up on TikTok, but I'm not on like crime talk or anything like that or cult talk. I just stalk Dixie and Charlie D'Amelio. And yes, I put Dixie's name first. Anyways, I found Katie from the Gabby Petito case because she had a lot of real-time updates with that case, and I've just followed her since. So when Katie posted a video of this beautiful mid-20-year-old dancer dancing to My Life by Billy Joel with claims that this woman's family thinks she's being held in a cult, I was immediately intrigued, as one is.
Currently, this was August of last year?
So, girl, this was last week.
Oh.
Yeah. And the woman in the video, her name is Miranda Derrick, and her family's pleading for help because they think that she's stuck in a content cult that doesn't really have an official name yet, but is associated with the production group 7M Films. So I'm dubbing it the 7M Films TikTok cult. And I know that sounds ridiculous, and I know it's hard not to make fucking jokes about it because what the fuck? It's a TikTok cult. It's a content cult. It really is.
Also known as Hype House.
Literally, though. I mean, and I'll get into it. It is like a Hype House, but their every move is being controlled. It's terrifying.
Jesus.
I'm not sure what else to call it, so that's what we're going to refer to.
And are they all children? You're going to tell me.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. They're not all children. I don't think I mentioned that, but they're like mid-20s, early 30s, you know, that kind of more young adult range. So the gist of this cult is that they lure in famous TikTok dancers, promising fame and fortune, but only if they attend this Bible study every week and cut off all communication with family and friends outside the cult. And honestly, it's so much more than that, and I'll get into it. That's the only way I could think to summarize it up in one sentence. Yeah. But no, obviously the one sentence version doesn't tell the full story. So stick with me here, people.
Mm.
Okay. Miranda and Melanie Wilking are two sisters who became famous on TikTok for their cute sisterly videos and dancing videos totaling over 3 million followers. Miranda is currently 25. I think she just turned 25. And Melanie is 22, maybe just turned 23. I'm not positive. But that young 20 range. After Miranda appeared on The Ellen Show, Melanie Wilking posted a 39-minute Instagram video on February 24th, 2022, with her parents stating they fear for Miranda's safety. The video is heartbreaking, and I'll link it, of course. I'll link all of the accounts, all the videos, etc.
Yeah.
It's a family pleading for their sister or their daughter to come home. And they state Miranda had joined a church in California and that they had not had contact with her since January of 2021. She was supposed to come home for a funeral, but abruptly decided not to 30 minutes before the trip, with no real explanation to why. And so the parents, you know, after the funeral were concerned and flew out to California to see her to make sure everything was okay. And they saw her, but she was being distant and they said not like herself. And that was the last time that they saw her.
Holy shit.
They believe her whole life is being controlled from schedule to content to social handles, outfits, emails, song choices, finances, and more. And Melanie actually attended a Bible study with her sister, or church service, I'm not sure which one of the two, at the beginning of all of this. But she let them know that she had to miss an upcoming week because of a previous plan she had. And they did everything in their power to get her to cancel those plans. They called her. They were asking her to cancel the plans. They said, wow, you got to come to the service. You got to come to the Bible study, whatever it was. And when she eventually, you know, just told them, no, I can't. I had these previous plans. They basically, I don't want to say kicked her out because she was never really in, but they cut all ties with her. And little did Melanie know, I think fate was on her side that day, because this gets crazy. So this church or cult that Miranda is a part of is known as the Shekinah Church and is led by Pastor Robert Shin, based in Santa Ana, California, which is, I think, LA. I'm assuming it's LA. I don't know geography, so don't quote me on that. But Pastor Robert Shin is a sketchy fella, to say the least. He says he can receive messages from God. And so basically he thinks this, that he's this prophet and he can speak to God and is allegedly controlling the members' lives through being this false prophet. I mean, in reality, I think the Bible does warn you against any like sort of people who say that they can speak to God or is that false prophet. And that's exactly what he's doing. So great. Yikes. There's no website for this church. It's invite only and it's super, super exclusive. They recruit mostly dancers to be a part of this group and they're known as 7M. Something I want to note here, there's no website for the church, but I think on the Wayback Machine, it's possible to find a very basic website for the church that had some more information on it. But they recruit these dancers into this group that they call 7M. And 7M is a film management company that manages, produces, and films all of those super high quality dance TikToks that this group of dancers creates. So it was formed less than a year ago by none other than Pastor Robert Shin. And that is a tongue twister of a name, I gotta admit. Pastor Robert Shin. It's funny because PRS.
Earlier Marissa said Robert Shin, and I thought it was.
No,
I thought you were trying to say name. Robertson.
No, first
and
name.
So that's why I said that.
Yeah, no, first name, last name. Pastor Robert Shin.
Okay, Robert Shin.
Yeah, so he formed that 7M management film group or whatever to then recruit these dancers all underneath this Shekinah church from earlier that I mentioned. And his son, actually, Isaiah Shin, films and produces the content that these dancers create. So it's a family business, okay? Now, outsiders believe that the name 7M is based on a belief in the Pentecostal churches that they need to take over the seven influences of the world in order for Christ to return. And those seven influences are education, religion, family, business, government, arts and entertainment, that's one section, okay? It's not two, okay? Mm-hmm. And then the last one being media. So within 7M, there's another character in this story, and his name is Daniel Joseph, and he's an actor and a producer. Not a very successful one, apparently, but he apparently mentors the members of the 7M cult. And allegedly, these dancers have to ask him on every decision that they face. So like, people think that Miranda was asking if she could go home to the funeral and he said no, and that's why she had to cancel her trip last minute and then cut off all ties. But even something as simple as like being on set, a choreographer came out and said that he was working with a dancer that was in 7M and he couldn't even answer his own questions. Like he was like, as if it was talking to a child, had to go to the parent and ask the parent these questions, aka Daniel Joseph.
Yeah. Ew.
Yeah. And an interesting point I'll bring up here is that Robert Shin, the pastor, is also technically a producer and had produced a few films back in the day. Also not super successful films. So I'd like to say there's some sort of similarities between the two alpha males of this cult previously trying their hand at acting or producing, not being successful, but now they have this control over these dancers and they're seeing that viral fame and those numbers come and grow on TikTok and Reels and all of that. And they probably
you just know that.
I don't know. It was really weird. There's a whole list of films. They're just weird and not good. So the videos that 7M produce under the umbrella of the church are amazing. They are high quality. They're high production, high energy. I mean, I absolutely have scrolled by them and given them a like before. I think they're great. They're engaging. Yeah. It's awesome. And they never mention God or religion or their church. So outside viewers like a random person scrolling by like me, you would never know. You would never know that this was something a lot darker than it's portraying to be. And so you might be asking yourself at this point how Miranda and Melanie were introduced to this cult.
Yeah.
And to that I say, it's all about who you know, right?
Oh, yeah.
So Miranda's boyfriend was also a dancer who actually performed on World of Dance. His name is James Derrick, but in the dance and social world, he goes by B-Dash. And he met the videographer and the producer that I mentioned earlier, Isaiah Shin. And Isaiah introduced them to the church that was led by his father, Robert. Now, Melanie and her parents posted that Instagram video pleading for more information, asking people for, you know, to speak up if their loved ones had been a victim of this cult. And sure enough, many of those loved ones came forward and started corroborating the stories of being cut off once their friends or family members joined that cult or that group. Samantha Long, who's a celebrity choreographer and creative dancer and well-known dancer queen. Oh, wait, not creative dancer. I meant creative director. Sorry, girl.
That's fine.
But she's a queen either way. She was one of the first
to... I'm saying that's fine, like you were apologizing to me.
Yeah. Well, girl being everyone that's listening to this. Sorry, girls. Right. Sorry, girlfriends. She was one of the first ones to post a video on her experience, specifically with B-Dash, about how their interactions within the past year started to become tense and hostile. And recently messaging with him, she swears it wasn't him who was responding. She swears it was coming from someone else. Now, there's another member of this cult named Tight Eyes. That's like his dance and social name too. And Tight Eyes has a business named Crump Inc. that he filed Robert Shin to be the CEO of in August of 2021. Tight Eyes is supposedly married to another group member, yet he is still legally married to the mother of his four-year-old son.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wait. Pause. Mm-hmm. I was Googling her because I wanted to see a picture. I follow this girl. I know exactly who this is.
Wait, really?
Like her TikToks. Yes, oh. I know the exact videos.
Isn't it crazy?
Fiance,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What's his name?
B-Dash.
Oh my God. Holy shit.
Oh girl, gets worse.
Okay, go. Okay. Sorry.
No, you're good. I'm glad that was a revelation there. Okay.
Wow. I have chills.
Okay. Tide's legal wife says he's limited contact with them and she's super, super upset about it, which obviously, like, another friend of a member of the cult claims that this member named Gordon and his wife are not actually married either. So this gives us hope that Miranda and Derek's marriage is fake. So I think, I'm not sure if I mentioned this before, but Miranda and Derek are married, guys. So the marriage was super sudden and they had gotten engaged and then apparently she changed her name on Instagram like the next day and someone reached out to her about it and was like, hey girl, oh my gosh, like one of her good friends. And was like, "When? Like, did you get married? I see your last name change." She was like, yeah, we just did a really quick private ceremony just so it could happen because obviously COVID's like ruining a bunch of wedding plans, whatever, but still weird. So people are assuming that these marriages within the cult are all fake marriages, especially since one is already still legally married to his ex-wife. Well, separated wife, I should say.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah, weird. So back to Robert Shin. Turns out his ass was sued in 2009 for fraudulently obtaining $3.8 million from a woman. And this woman claims that Shin used mind control to force her to give her the money to Robert Shin and his church. She says she was forced to work 6 hours a week, 10 hours a day with no pay from Robert. She claims Robert and his team took over her bank accounts, emails, and computer, and that they were sending messages to people on her behalf. She claims that they were told to cut off family and friends in order to serve the church and be right in the eyes of God. Now, this is a real lawsuit against this guy that happened in 2009, and all I can think is that history repeats itself, and abusers have patterns that hold true, and as you can see, hold true in this story. I mean, it's insane that she's listing all of these things that Melanie and her family are saying is happening to their sister, their daughter, Miranda. So,
wow.
Speaking of patterns, remember B-Dash that I mentioned earlier?
Yeah.
Turns out there's a backstory there. His previous wife spoke out to Katie from Without a Crystal Ball and said that they had both gotten involved in a cult where the pastor told different men and women of the group to marry in order to please God. So they did. Now, The pastor is also currently still a registered sex offender and still preaches today in California. So that's great. But guess who else was in this cult? The previously mentioned member of the new cult, Tight Eyes. And apparently one day they all just happened to like wake up from what they were doing in this cult and they left. And B-Dash and his previous wife decided to divorce and co-parent their kid that they had during their time in the cult. Now, once his ex-wife found out about this new cult, she was shocked that he fell back into one because they had just gotten out of one, you know, a few years back. And their son had found out about this new engagement of B-Dash and Miranda online on his birthday when B-Dash posted about it. B-Dash didn't think to, you know, call his son and wish him a happy birthday, but he was happy to post an engagement of
I saw that
him
video.
And Miranda. Yeah. And the son
– it looked really fake. You know what? It looked really fake. And I remember thinking that. I was like, it looks really fake.
Yeah. It's it's so, so sad. Weird. And so his son called B-Dash to ask him about it, and he claims that they had already been married for a year, which is further proof to hope that the marriage between B-Dash and Miranda is fake, because that timeline's not adding up to like everything else that went on. Mm-hmm. And okay, these members have a very large following on social media, all of the members of 7M or the cult. Yeah. And as Katie from Without a Crystal Ball is posting about this, and Melanie Wilking is also posting about this, and so many other big name dancers and choreographers are speaking out and posting about it, you've got to be wondering if the 7M cult members are seeing everything that's being said about them. And turns out they are. And so Miranda obviously came in very vague at first, and she posted that original video that I mentioned at the very top of the story of her dancing to My Life by Billy Joel. Do you guys know that song? I don't care what you say anymore. This is my life. Yeah. And she captioned it something like, it's my life. Leave me alone. Smiley face, thumbs up emoji or something like that.
Peace out.
Yeah. But shortly after that was released, and granted, this was all a week ago. Okay. Or 2 weeks ago, whatever. No, a week ago, literally. Shortly after that was released, she released a statement on her Instagram story, and it's long. And again, I'll post a link to where you can go to find the full statement. But she basically just stated that she was not in a religious cult, and that the reason she doesn't speak to her family anymore is because they had a falling out, claiming that they had called the cops on her boyfriend or husband now, B-Dash, for kidnapping her, which we later find out is true. They did call the cops, but it was more of a wellness check kind of thing, because they just completely got cut off in terms of communication and ties, and they had no clue where she was, what she was doing, who she was with, etc., other than like stalking her TikTok. The second statement that Miranda released was actually a TikTok live that happened just yesterday, where she states that she's great and she's safe. And unfortunately, she's very super passive aggressive in the way that she speaks. And that's what I was just trying to do there, but I was also trying to read my notes, so it wasn't successful. But she's basically like, the first question I'm getting is, am I okay? Actually, I'm great. I am great, guys. Oh, okay. I swear I am great. And the second question I'm getting is that, are you safe? Yeah, I would say I'm safe. My doors are locked. I'm in a house. I feel safe and I am safe. And stuff like that, like just weirdly passive and like super frustrated on the inside, you can tell, but is saying those things and is like looking off to the side a lot. And she states that there's a ton of lies and twisting of the truth, and that she had spoken to her sister just a week ago. So the claims that she hadn't spoken to her sister in over a year is a lie, apparently. But in reality, apparently it was just her contacting her sister, Melanie, to take down any of the videos about her, because it's not true. She's living a happy, successful life, whatever. Yikes. And so just in the last 24 hours, there's actually an account that popped on Instagram called Wilking Sisters 2. Now, I didn't state this earlier, but the original sister account where Melanie and Miranda filmed was the Wilking Sisters, or just at Wilking Sisters. So Wilking Sisters 2 is claiming to be Miranda and said that they'd be going live on TikTok at 11 a.m. today. And sure enough, Miranda went live at 11 a.m. today. And very little was said other than that she was doing great and living her life, and this is what people wanted to see. So she's just filming what she's doing. So she was like painting her nails and doing laundry. But what's super weird about all of this is that You know when you forget your password to an Instagram account and you can like see part of the email or the phone number to send the login info to? Mm-hmm. Well, the email is not anything that Miranda Derrick would have. It doesn't match her original Miranda Derrick Instagram account. In fact, it matches the email and number of another manager within 7M, Chloe Shin.
Oh, come
on. So they think that Chloe Shin is controlling and managing this account. And the bio of this account says, quote, Wilkins family drama page, and she tags her whole family and then says, quote, forced to address the lies here, end quote. First off, forced. I mean, the whole world is speculating that she's being forced to do these TikToks like a content cult, what do they call it? Content farm. Like she's being forced to work and not get paid and yada, yada, whatever. Why would you use the word forced? You know, we're all triggered by that word in this current moment. Second of all, no one's forcing you. No one is forcing you unless your management is, which considering that the account might have been made by Chloe Shin, you know, you never know. And then also, why isn't it on her main account? Like, why did she create this weird, like, second sister account to address all this? Part of me is like, okay, I guess she has the following on her main account, so she doesn't want to bring all of that into those who don't know, who aren't aware of this. Yeah. But at the same time, there's that following there, so she can address people directly to her larger following. But I don't know. I don't know. I think the history of abuses here from this pastor and management group, and others are speaking out about it. So I wanted to do the same on our little platform of 30 ghoul friends. And this mystery, as I mentioned before, I mean, there's updates as of today. It's constantly evolving. And I'm not sure if I was thinking maybe I'll do minisodes like once a week to talk about updates on the case. But in reality, if you guys want in real time updates, go follow Without a Crystal Ball and Wilking Sisters on Instagram. It's not the Wilking Sisters. It's just
Wilking Murder Meets Mystery, just while you're at it.
Yeah, follow us too, obviously. But I mean, if you want those real-time updates by people who are, I mean, without a crystal ball, Katie Joy she's the one who found a lot of this information in terms of Pastor Robert Shin previously having a lawsuit and previously being a producer and all of these other connections. She's interviewing family and friends that are, you know, have victims in this cult. And so it's just amazing what she's doing. And the Wilking sisters are also supporting her in helping them find out more information.
It wasn't confirmed, at least until Miranda's family went on Instagram, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, no one knew about it until they did. And so them going on Instagram and saying, this is what's happening to our sister Miranda, other people spoke up and was like, oh my God, that's happening to me and my friend. I mean, me and my friend were in a dance crew and now they won't even look at me type of thing. And so others are just starting to speak up. And there's a lot of like really trusted and well-respected choreographers in the industry that are posting about it. And to me, that says enough because like, oh my gosh, like it – I don't know. There's just people that you trust out there, and I trust these people versus like this sketchy dude that was previously in a lawsuit for something super similar. So, and also two cult members, previous cult members that are now falling back into another cult. You know, it's just like there are a lot of worse things going on in this world, right? But they're a content farm and they're making these people work and think that this – they're dancing for – these people, money. In reality, they were already talented dancers with a huge following before joining this group. They don't need to do it with this group. They can get out and they can be successful on their own, you know?
So can we pretty safely assume that anybody who's dancing with Miranda in her videos is in this cult?
If not in it, they're enabling it. And so that's what, you know, we're trying to do here is just to raise awareness of what's going on in LA in this so-called dance group when in reality it's this religious cult that is not what it should be like to be successful or do what you love or, you know, dance. So I mean, I've been following this case for 7 days now, I think a week from today. It's insane how much is coming out each day and how much they're uncovering and how much people are starting to speak up. So isn't that fucking crazy?
That is unreal. And it's so – it's made so much weirder by the fact that I know her. And I've like stayed up – I've stayed up late watching her videos.
Yeah. Like, no, I get it, girl. I found her one night
on like – I think it was like she was suggested to me on Facebook.
Well, she looks a lot like – Instagram. She reminds me of Julianne Hough. I think they look very similar.
Yes, they do.
Short hair too, and
they really do.
Sharp dancers. Yeah, engaging. Wow. Yeah, but I hope they soon realize they can do this without this management company and get especially with people now. that'll actually manage them and focus on their well-being and not control every aspect of their lives. But we'll see. I'll keep the girlfriends updated. Actually, no promises there. Just Google it or definitely follow Without a Crystal Ball or Wilking Sisters on Instagram, because they will have literally seconds after they post something. I mean, something comes up. So Grace, do you want to tell the ghoul friends where they could find us?
Yeah. So you can find us in HeHop, but also email us at wheremurdermeetsmystery@gmail.com and follow us at wheremurdermeetsmystery on Instagram.
Yes.
And Marissa's address is blah, blah, blah.
Adibidada. And Grace's number is didudada, blah, blah, blah. And we will see you next week for episode 19.
We love ya.
Love ya.